Good evening.
Well, speaking of unoriginal, before we close off this one, because it's been San Diego Comic-Con this weekend, lots of news flying about, but you did bring out something that has particularly stood out for you. And as it's the only Star Trek series that I watched the entirety of, although admittedly it was a long time ago, so my memory isn't that all that great on everything, but Picard. They released more information about Picard. And he's, yeah, by far my favourite Star Trek captain. It's the only... I didn't watch the last series. What was it? What's the one at the moment? Not Enterprise. Is it?
Discovery.
Discovery. So I've not watched that. I saw the films. I know how you feel about the films. So we won't talk about those. But yeah, I would watch Star Trek for a few seasons and then kind of get a bit bored. Next Generation was the only one that that kind of kept me captivated the whole way through. So I watched some Deep Space Nine. I watched some Voyager. I watched some Enterprise, but I didn't really see those shows out. And this new one that started, I didn't even start with because I had very mixed things. But because it's Picard, it has piqued my interest.
Very much so. I think what I will say about Discovery is the first series is quite boring, but the second series is actually very good.
Sounds like the recent Tick series they had on Amazon. I was trying to sell that to somebody. I said, like, I really struggled through. I was a massive fan of the comics, a massive fan of the cartoon and the original series, but I struggled through the first series of it. I just thought it was a lot of padding. Whilst the second series went straight out of the gates, like the cartoon did, and thought this is brilliant, and then they cancelled it. I think that's the problem sometimes. If you have a poor first season, it can ruin the audience going forward. The only time I can think that didn't happen in recent times was The American Office. I don't know if you ever watched The American Office, but they put it out as like the first season. It was about six episodes because it was like a mid-season replacement. But I think the first four of those episodes were like shot-for-shot remakes.
They
were awful.
Awful.
And then once they started doing their own thing, it worked. But they were lucky that they didn't leave it too long to start doing that. Otherwise, that would never have lasted.
No.
But Picard, anyway.
Just going back to what you said about The Tick, the other program that used to be on the same time as that was The Critic.
Oh, my God, I love The Critic.
That needs to come back. What's John Lovitz doing these days?
Not much. That's my really poor John Lovitz impression.
Apparently, he was doing some work at City Walk in Hollywood for a while.
He had a comedy club there.
Did he?
And I know that because that was originally where Kevin Smith did his podcast from.
Right.
He actually hired space above the club and he would use it as offices, record some podcasts up there, but he would do a live podcast on the main stage on a Friday or Saturday night or something. And he did it for quite a few years. And then they had a falling out over money because the comedy club wasn't doing very well. And Lovitz wanted to increase the money they were paying to have the space. They just left. And I think it closed not that long after. But yeah, he did have a comedy club up there for a while. Yeah. They did, I think it was like early 2000s-ish, I want to say, when people were starting to try and do streaming programs. But before we was in the world of being able to do it, I'm certain they did a few Critic like kind of short episodes. But it wasn't the same
webisodes or some similar.
But no, that you're right, that show was brilliant. I loved that show.
I love that show. There was also another one as well called Action. Did you ever see that?
No, but I heard about it. Was that the one with Jay
Moore?
Yes. Yeah. The premise sounded great and I never saw it.
Mm.
And it was a similar time, I think, like that kind of like mid to late 90s, wasn't it?
Yeah, sort of just going to the early noughties.
Because
I was like writing my scripts and going, right, I'm going to move to Hollywood. I've watched Action. I've watched The Critic. I know what it's all about. I'm just going to go there and make money.
Yeah.
I got my travel guide to LA. I bought my BA tickets and then I never went.
Oh my God.
What would I have done? I mean, seriously.
I had a similar thing. I had, because of that stupid song, it's not a stupid song, but because of that stupid song, I had said that I wanted to go to LA before I was 26 so I could go drinking. That was a line said in Drinking in LA by Brand Van 3000. And I was adamant that's what I was going to do. I didn't think I was going to stay there, but I was definitely going to go there and, you know, do all the movie tours and do the Walk of Fame and do Universal Studios and all this kind of stuff. And I never did.
Neither did I.
You've been to Hollywood, though.
I have now, yeah, quite a few times. But when you said song, I thought you were going to quote Randy Newman.
Sure.
That Bob Dylan?
Well, there's not much between the two of them.
So getting back to Picard, I think it looks fantastic.
So I haven't seen the trailer yet, but I've had it effectively spoiled for me. So I know what happens in the trailer.
Go on.
No, I was going to say, I was intrigued by Seven of Nine because she was obviously from Voyager.
She was.
So how is she in this new Picard universe?
What it seems to suggest, because you see a Borg cube, it seems to suggest that the girl he's got to protect, you've got to protect this girl in this show. It seems to suggest that either she is Data's daughter or she is something to do with the Borg. And that's why Seven of Nine is there. And I'm quite excited that they've gone down this route. And I could be wrong, though. But when Patrick Stewart first teased that he was going back to do a new show, he teased that it was going to be more political than action. And the reason why he was going back is because it mirrors the conflicts of our time, such as Brexit. So I thought to myself, oh God, Brexit's bloody boring. So is he going to go back and do a bloody parliamentary election broadcast for whichever party?
Starting Nigel Farage as a Fergie.
Yes, Nigel Farage as a Fergie. So I was a bit like, oh God, it's going to be really naff, isn't it? But I was excited when they announced it. Then they teased it and I got very unexcited about it. Whereas now, seeing the trailer, it does appear that there is going to be quite a lot of action and it's going to basically tie up all of the loose ends from The Next Generation. That's what it looks to me. Because Data dies at the end of the last film that they made.
See, I don't think I saw the last Next Generation film. Was that in
Nemesis,
the Tom Hardy one, wasn't it?
Tom Hardy one, yeah.
I never saw that one. Because they were weird, because like, I really liked Generations. And then I think, was it First Contact was afterwards?
Yeah.
And I thought that was a little boring. And then, was it Insurrection after that?
Yeah,
and that was pretty good.
Any even-numbered Star Trek film is good.
Right.
All the odd numbers are pretty pants.
Right, okay.
And I think Nemesis was an even number, but it was still pretty pants, unfortunately. And then that's what basically killed them doing any more films.
Yeah, because that one didn't do... I remember that one didn't do very well.
Didn't do very well, no. So it leaves so many loose ends to tie up, essentially. Right. They don't need to tie up, but in order to give the man who blocked you some credence, Brent Spiner, which I always thought was Brent Spinner when I was younger.
I still don't know. He didn't correct me, so.
No. we can't now, can he?
No.
So I think that the trailer seems to suggest that it might show...
We'll see Riker.
Well, we know for a fact we'll see Riker and Troy.
She mentioned something, didn't she?
Well, Patrick Stewart today in a panel said on Monday he's got to be at the lot early because he's filming his scenes with Riker.
Right.
And Troy will be in it as well at some point.
Nice.
So we know that they're in it. We know Data's in it because he's in the trailer.
Mm.
Seven of Nine's in it. I'd be very surprised if Kate Muldoon isn't in it somewhere.
Mr. Chakotay. Yeah. It's my favourite worst impression that no one gets except you.
I know, it's so great. But she is such a good actress, though. She's just one of the best character actresses going, that lady.
Yeah, I saw her pop up in something recently.
Well, Orange is the New Black, isn't it?
Yeah, I've not... you know what? I think it was that, but I've never watched an episode of it, but I think my wife might have been watching it, and I called her, and I was like, yeah, I know who that is.
Mm.
I mean, she didn't have the silly hair, but you could see in her face who it was.
She plays this sort of butch, I think she's like a lesbian chef that works in the prison called Red, and she's Russian. And
right, she was definitely...
She's a bit of a gangster.
Right, yeah, she was definitely serving food.
Mm.
So that would make sense that you said that, yeah. Okay.
So, so I'm excited for it. It looks very well shot. The scenes that they showed in the trailer, they visually look compelling and interesting. They don't look like a cheap, throw-it-together sort of production.
That's good.
You know, it doesn't look like Deep Space Nine Season 8, you know, do you know what I mean? It looks like they're actually dried.
Oh, man.
So I'm excited for it, really. And I you know, Patrick Stewart, he's not going to be around forever.
No.
Need to get the most out of him while they're here. You know, like, for example... It's been is it 2 or 3 years now since Robin Williams died, literally to the day?
Yes.
And, just so incredibly sad about, you know, he was just incredibly funny. The world has lost, you know, Robin Williams. You know, did we do enough with him while he was still here, you know?
That's a funny one because it was one of those, like, people, I know people have said this before, like, how can you get upset when someone dies that you never met? But he was an example of that with me. I didn't cry, but I did feel incredibly down about it.
Oh, me too, yeah.
I think the thing is, yes, I'd never met him, but I grew up on a lot of his films. You know, even Popeye. But he was amazing in Aladdin. He was... hilarious in Mrs. Doubtfire, and I really enjoyed Hook, and I still do. It's a hill I'll die on, that Hook isn't actually an awful film. It's just odd film. And then, you know, towards the end of his career, he started to do more serious work again. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen 1 Hour Photo.
I have, yeah.
I know very few people that have seen that film, so I'm glad you have. But he did like that and Insomnia quite close together. And in both of those, he was the complete opposite of how you saw him.
Mm.
But what it showed you is that he had incredible range. He would be so quick that you wouldn't catch all of his routine because he'd move so fast from one joke to another, or he'd throw an impression or whatever. Like, I can't imagine there ever being another one of him.
No, definitely not.
And yeah, that stuff is sad. And as we are kind of getting old now, I went last week to see that film Yesterday, which is not a particularly good film. But one of the things in it, you going to go and see it? Are you bothered about seeing it?
What film's this? I don't.
Yesterday. Know. It's a world where the Beatles never existed.
Oh, that. No, yeah. I probably won't. I'll probably watch it on a plane or something.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, it's definitely worth no more than that.
Really?
I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but I find, even though I've got like a card, you know, I pay for a card so I can go see as many films as I want in a month. I didn't want to go and see that. My wife was the one that wanted to go and see it, so we went to see it. But I was like, I'd rather just wait for that to come on TV, if I'm honest. Where this is like a world where the Beatles never existed, and this guy, you know, basically puts the music out as his own, towards the end of the film, he gets found out, because some people did remember, and he gets given the address to go and see John Lennon, who survived.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously he wasn't famous. And, it was all quite nice, stuff like that. But then you think, we're only a few years away till we've got no Beatles left. You know, we're down to two already. And they had a massive cultural impact on people. I bought my wife tickets to go and see Elton John next year, who I might be seeing, or my daughter might be seeing. We haven't decided yet. Mm. But I've seen him already and he's great. But, you know, he's in his 70s now. He's not going to be around forever. We lost Bowie the other year. You know, that was another one that had a big impact on me. And then you look at Hollywood and, like, you know, we're running out of stars. Because everyone's getting older. So we are going to get to an age where, we lost people like Robin Williams, but, we're not going to have, like, I don't want to say George Clooney, it's not the same kind of person, but you know what I mean? Like, you know, there are big actors and actresses that we're going to start losing soon.
Without a doubt.
Ian McKellen are two good examples of that, really, because isn't Ian McKellen like 80 now?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
So
his birthday recently.
Yeah.
That's why I went to see Ken Dodd a few years ago.
Yeah, because you knew, like, he wasn't going to be around forever.
Well, he was in his, he was about 88, wasn't he, I think he was?
Something like that, yeah.
I saw him when he was about 86. It's quite a funny story, which I can tell you next time if you like, but... but, you know, he passed away, didn't he, last year?
Yep. Yeah. So do what you can while you've got them.
Well, yeah, you see, like you say that we've only got two Beatles left. I mean, we've really only got Paul McCartney left. No one really cares about Ringo, do they?
Hey, look, those first couple of seasons of Thomas the Tank Engine would have been nothing about Ringo.
I mean, he wasn't even the best drummer in the Beatles, was he? That's the famous line from John Lennon, isn't it?
Yes. They mentioned that. I watched Travel Man. Mm. Travel Man when I went to Hamburg.
Oh, yeah.
And they did like a Beatles tour around Hamburg, and that line had come up about it. So I think the woman was trying to say was, was possibly a misquote, but...
Probably.
We'll still believe it. So,
but my favourite, and it's the one, and I'll tell you how he's my favourite, because I've got more of his songs in my car than the others, is George Harrison.
I remember when George Harrison died, and I was like, hey, he was just another bloke in the Beatles. He wasn't like Lennon or McCartney. So, you know, does it really matter? And then actually started to find out more about him and kind of go, actually, most of their best or some of my favourite Beatles songs were his.
Mm.
Like everyone said Lennon and McCartney were this amazing songwriting partnership, but actually he played a really big part in that. Mm. And then obviously he had his solo stuff and he had the Traveling Wilburys and also as well, completely outside of music, but, you know, we wouldn't have had Life of Brian.
Lots of films he financed, yeah.
So actually, yeah, I really then started to kind of appreciate my ignorance over him.
Frank Sinatra, just before he died, was interviewed, and he said to him, "What is your favourite song of all time?" And he said, "I think the greatest song ever written is Something by the Beatles that was written by George Harrison."
Mm.
And that was Frank Sinatra said that.
Yeah. It's quite funny, actually, because when we had our wedding video, there was my dad was putting it together for us, and he said, I'm going to put like a kind of montage-y thing on there with like people, you know, all chatting and doing stuff at your, you know, your drinks reception kind of thing. Yeah. What music do you want me to put over it? And Lindsay said, "Oh, something by the Beatles." And he went, "Yeah, that's fine, but like, what exactly do you want me to put on there?" She's like, "No, something by the Beatles." And this went back and forth about three or four times. And we're like, no, literally the song Something by the Beatles. But they claim to be quite a fan of the Beatles, but like, yeah. So like, yeah, that is probably my favourite Beatles song.
Mm. So which one do you want then? No, Something. Yeah, I've got that. Yeah, but which one in particular?
Memories. Is there anything else you wanted to discuss before we wrap up?
No, I don't think so.
I feel like there's still, well, there is still loads to talk about. I'm sure we will in subsequent episodes. But yeah, I'm quite content with this one, so that's fine. Actually, no, you know what? Before we go, because mm-hmm. you weren't there the other day when we was recording, Ghostbusters excited for Halloween Horror Nights?
I'm relieved that they finally announced it.
Put a press release out, yeah.
Because I'm fed up with people keep messaging me about it every two bloody minutes. no, but I am quite excited. I have known about it for quite a long time, and I think they had issues getting their licensor to sign off on everything. Not that there was a problem, it's just I think Sony perhaps is a much larger organisation to deal with than perhaps they used to.
Yeah.
So that's probably why it's taken so long for them to get it sorted. But I am excited for it. And I think I'm particularly excited because I don't know how they're going to do a lot of it.
No.
So it's either going to be amazing or it's going to be like really shit. But let's hope it's really, let's hope it's amazing.
We were trying to the other day think about how they could do bits and pieces. Mm. One of the things that I brought up, which you may know the answer to, I don't know, is, you know, do you know if they've got any of the props left from the stage show?
I don't think they do.
Because, I mean, it was a long time ago, so yeah. I'd assume they probably don't. But
no, I don't think they do.
That would have helped. But
like, for example, from Twister onwards, they started selling the stuff from the attractions.
Right.
Prior to that, everything would get destroyed unless it had a reuse worth.
Yeah.
So if they could reuse it somewhere else, they would. So, for example, do you remember Stage 54 or something? It used to be where the talking donkey is currently.
Yeah.
And they would show you props and sets from films. A lot of that wouldn't get sent back to Hollywood. So they would say, well, do we dump it or do we reuse it? So then they would reuse it for like Halloween Horror Nights props.
Right.
So they, if it had a use, they would reuse it. But the only other time stuff would be saved was if any of the office staff would go in and take stuff while it's being demolished. Of course, in the last few years prior to Twister closing, there had been heavy lockdowns where you're not allowed in for health and safety reasons. But there was like a window of opportunity where people did used to go and nick stuff. And the only reason I'm waffling on about this, because I find it interesting, is the when they refurbed Hitchcock into Shrek, there was, as you walked in on the left, there was five Hitchcock mannequins. One of those mannequins was stolen and it reappeared in the tour guide's office backstage. Everything else was completely destroyed and ripped out.
Oh, man, it just breaks my heart. It really does.
Well, imagine somewhere there is a landfill with a giant King Kong head in it.
That's what I mean. Like, I just couldn't. It was just depressed me so much.
I mean, even that, you know where you could have your photo taken at the end of Kong with a giant hand?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even that, they could have saved that, couldn't they? And just think to themselves, we'll probably need that in years to come.
Well, I mean, the thing is, full stop, I don't know why that had to go completely anyway, because, you know, Kong, that version of Kong, was a Universal film. So just sell it that, you know, it's this Kong, that it's ours, and it is a picture taken. Who doesn't want a picture taken with King Kong? Like,
Kong and Jaws, the only reason they went away was because they were expensive to run.
Yeah.
That's the cold, hard truth of it.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it always comes down to finances. I know. Yeah. I get that. I mean, Jaws is a tough one because I don't know how you can do that attraction cheaper.
No.
Do you know what I mean? I don't see how you can. Kong, I suppose, was a big space anyway. So you've got that combination of how much the ride costs and how frequently it breaks down and what you can actually do in that building.
But the thing is, whether you've seen the original Jaws or whether you've seen the 1976 King Kong or whatever year it was, most people haven't seen it, let's be honest. It doesn't matter because, one, you're being chased by a giant shark. That's terrifying. And then the other one, you're being chased by a giant monkey. So either way you look at it, they're both terrifying and they don't necessarily need you to know any backstory whatsoever.
No, no.
And that's the problem that they've got now with a lot of their IPs as they're starting to age, you know.
Well, I mean, Kong and Jaws are pretty timeless. You know, Kong gets rebooted every few years anyway, but the original Kong is a landmark in cinema and is, you know, well regarded as, you know, being quite important in terms of like the history of film. So the Kong name is always famous, even if the films kind of go in and out of fashion. And Jaws has never gone away.
Yeah.
You know, how many times has that film been released in special edition Blu-ray? How many times has it been re-released at the cinema?
No one's touched doing a sequel, have they? Jaws, like since obviously the Michael Caine.
Not a reboot, no. There were rumours a few years ago that they were trying to do a sequel.
Oh, there was a script. I read it. It was bloody terrible.
And that's why they didn't make it.
It ended with Richard Dreyfuss was character as this older marine biologist. And it ended with a showdown where he took a boat and it was at the Golden Gate Bridge. And he drove this boat at the shark, and the shark swam towards the boat. And then as the shark opened its mouth, he drove the boat into the shark and it choked to death on the boat. That would have been the climax to Jaws 5.
To be fair, it still sounds better than just rolling over and dying because he had indigestion or...
indigestion on Quint.
Oh, yeah. if only there was shark-sized Rennies or something.
But the thing is, I don't think I'd really want to see a Jaws sequel, purely because I just don't like CGI anymore. I think it's been overused.
Oh, the films that I've enjoyed the most that have been like that have been, you know, films with more practical effects. Like, I've said it on numerous podcasts, my guilty pleasure film franchise now is The Fast and Furious. And one of the things that I do really appreciate with those films is a lot of that is proper old school stunts.
Yeah.
Even though some of it is absolutely ludicrous, a lot of it is actual, you know, car chases and real stunts and not just CGI'd in. And also like new Star Wars. I know you don't like the new Star Wars, but... if you look at those films compared to the prequel trilogy, you know, they've got real sets. It's not people just trying to look at tennis balls all the time.
Yeah.
The eye line, right. You know, you feel you, they're there with a physical set and it's more believable because of that. So I know exactly what you mean. You know, superheroes is a little bit tougher, but still, it's why I never watched The Meg.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's terrible. But, I mean, if you look at the way Spielberg's always used, well, how he used to use CGI, like, for example, Jurassic Park. I mean, that sequence with the two kids in the kitchen with the raptors, there is CGI. But the bits with the close-ups where they're using those puppets, they're terrifying.
I only watched a making of that a few maybe about a year ago, I found a video on YouTube about that. I had no idea how they did Jurassic Park. I just assumed Jurassic Park was the start of CG, which is why I couldn't work out why it looked so good when other films have looked so bad. It was only like watching a lot of the behind the scenes stuff, I realized that it was the other way around. It was that most of it was practical effects. And that's why it looks so good.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, those Velociraptor costumes were phenomenal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Really, really clever. Yeah, so Dying Art, I wish to bring it back. Films make enough money now that they can afford to spend a bit more on that.
Well, the thing is, though, Nick, is a lot of those people that did all that, they're all dying out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's lost art.
You know, it's a lost art.
The I mean, what was it? I think it was when I saw Spider-Man. You look at all the artists that are in it, and you think, you know what? There must be like 100 people there plus. Paying all of those people to do the special effects. Would you have needed that many people if it was practical?
Yeah.
CG was supposed to be a cheap way of doing special effects. I can't see how the financials work, because surely you need more people doing it than practical. But yeah, bring back the old school. Bring back, what I want is, Universal, Third Gate, Retro Island, and just put the old rides back there.
Well, I'll tell you now, because we're not on a Halloween Horror Nights podcast, but put it this way, I would be very surprised if next year or the year after we don't get a Jaws house at Halloween Horror Nights. It was so talked about this year, and internally at Universal I've seen a lot of stuff to suggest that people are talking about it. So it would mean they're either A, planning to put a ride somewhere about Jaws, which I think is unlikely, or they're considering it for a Halloween Horror Nights house.
I mean, next year's 30, isn't it? So you think if they're going to do it any year, it would be an anniversary year, because that's not an anniversary of a ride, but it's such an iconic ride. Such an iconic ride. It's such an iconic film. You would save it for a big event.
Yeah.
I think
so. I mean, if they can pull off a giant marshmallow man, they can.
Well, yeah.
They can pull off Jaws.
I've already said that if they're not selling toasted marshmallow candles, they've missed an opportunity. At the end of that. But, does that mean we could see a Kong house next year?
Well, we've got a Kong ride. What do we want a Kong house for?
Well, yeah, but proper Kong.
Funny enough, going back to what you said at the start, the only Halloween Horror Nights house that used the Kong attraction, the original Kong attraction, as a house was a house that they built in the sets that you would see from below the cable car, which was themed to, and you mentioned it earlier, The Shadow.
Really? How bizarre. I did see some photos actually recently of some shadow. I wasn't sure if it was a show or a scare zone or something, but I can't remember who posted it now, but someone had posted it, I think, that was involved in it. I didn't even know it was highlighted at Universal at all.
Was The Shadow Alec Baldwin or was it Liam Neeson?
No, it was Liam Neeson was Darkman.
Yeah. Oh, Darkman.
It was a shadow, yeah.
Right. I always get them too muddled up.
Well, from what I'm sure I've read recently, that Darkman was made because they couldn't get the rights to make The Shadow. So it was his, Sam Raimi's kind of love letter to The Shadow, apparently, but I don't know enough about the characters to know how much of that is actually true. But yeah. And funny enough, but I think both of them were Universal releases in the end.
Were they?
So yeah, Shadow definitely was, but I'm sure Darkman was.
But Universal did used to take more risks with releasing stuff. They seem to have become risk averse now, but
yeah, they need to get back that get back on that, start making some decent films again.
Well, this is it. Otherwise, we're just going to let Disney run the cinemas, aren't we, the way it's going?
Well, on that, we did see this weekend that Avengers overtook Avatar.
Which is good, because I think Avatar's a pile of rubbish, so I'm glad that they have done.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way, to be honest.
But, you know, I am getting to the point where, you know, Disney's become so big that everything's Disney, and, you know, but I am quite pleased that in the last week, you know, Picard, Cats, Top Gun 2, you know, Fast and Furious, other franchises as well, have all been talked about heavily on social media, none of which are anything to do with Disney.
All right, so we'll end this episode then, because you had to say the C word, Cats.
I didn't say people were talking positively about them. I just said they were talking about
it. I showed my wife the trailer yesterday, and she said, "What have you done?"
Mm.
Well, I've not done it. I just showed you it. I mean, I mean, within hours of that going on, I saw numerous people saying, "Is it coming to Halloween Horror Nights next year?"
Well, it's not just that. It's Lloyd Webber as well. I mean, that's enough to give you nightmares, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a Lloyd Webber fan. I'm a musical fan, but I'm not a Lloyd Webber fan. I've never seen the stage show, and seeing that trailer explains why I've never seen the stage show. But the whole thing just looks absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it does make you think, why?
Yeah. Yeah,
very. I can't see it being a cheap production either.
No, not with the names they've got in it. It does look like they've spent money on it, just they've not spent it wisely. I did see Top Gun as well. That looks interesting. Weird they're making a sequel now, but hey-ho.
But there always was a rule in Hollywood. I think they used to call it the Alan Smithy rule, which was if you have too many A-listers in your film, then your film is probably going to be shit.
Which is what happened with Movie 42. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the classic example is the original Casino Royale.
Right.
You've got all the great and good in that film, and it is just abysmal.
I've only ever caught bits and pieces of that. I never watched it all the way through.
Mm.
Just caught it on TV a few times. But it doesn't surprise me. But yeah, Cats was definitely a trailer that came out this week. But yeah, you're right. I think there is too much of a danger of a monopoly, and something needs to change. Definitely.
Well, only for their own benefit. Otherwise, they're going to start cannibalizing, aren't they?
I mean, I hate to use another wrestling analogy, but when wrestling started to get shit, it was when WWE, which is the Disney in this situation, were both of their big rivals.
Yeah.
Because then they had no one to compete against. And so the product got really stale, because you're not being kept on your toes. You're just passing everything through. You're just doing everything by the numbers. You're not being challenged.
Well, this is it. You see, this is why in Florida it's so good, because you've got Universal and Disney continually nipping at each other for the last 30 years.
Yep.
That's healthy competition, and it's only good for us, the fans.
Yeah.
Because they have to, you know, keep finding ways of dragging us to their theme park all the time. Whereas in the cinema, you are getting to the point now where Disney is just so big that, you know, when was the last time, you know, Paramount had a hit? Or, you know, MGM, or which is Sony, I suppose, isn't it? But, you know, the studios, you know, they're not anywhere near the same size as Disney, are they?
But if they're having successes, it's with, you know, like Sony's big successes have been what? Spider-Man, Spider-Verse, Venom.
Yeah. Which are all on the shirt coattails of Marvel.
Yeah. So Universal at the moment have got Fast and Furious, which is still not a huge franchise, and Paramount's got Mission Impossible.
And again, Tom Cruise is not going to last forever.
No, not with what he's doing.
Well, exactly. He might end up falling off a bloody skyscraper the way he's going. Fast and Furious, well, no pun intended, but the wheels are coming off that pretty swift, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they've announced another two or three films, I think, but they've announced that already. It's still not a... It's a big franchise, but it's still not huge. They're struggling. Paramount is the other one with Transformers, which is another franchise which is dying, which is a shame, actually, because the last one, that Bumblebee one, was actually pretty good.
It's pretty good, yeah. I mean, the Universal Monsters, unfortunately, that never took off.
No, although...
But it was terribly made. What
happens now with the reboot, but...
I'm a little bit cautious about that reboot. In as much as the guy writing it, who created Saw, Lee Whannell, who I interviewed for Scare Zone a couple of years ago. He's actually a really nice guy. And I have no doubt in his abilities, but he announced he was writing Invisible Man in, was it November?
Last
year?
Yeah.
And last week they started filming it. That's quite a quick turnaround.
Isn't Blumhouse behind it though?
Well, he is, but you know, he does do good films, but he does also do a few shit ones from time to time.
But
and I'm not saying Invisible Man's gonna be rubbish, but it does make you think that in that between November and now they've had to write the thing, agree the thing with Universal, and then go into pre-production and plan the production, you know, get all the actors on board, you know, blah, 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 blah. That's a hell of a lot of stuff to do in essentially, what, just over 6 months.
I agree. But time will tell on that
one.
Can't be as bad as it was looking.
Well, I'm cautiously optimistic if they can, you know, pull it out of the bag.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think that's enough for us for this episode. Cause I think we overpassed our first episode, so that's good, or bad depending on how you listen to podcasts. But
well, I mean, I was very surprised with all the positive feedback we've had on this.
Why? You're an entertaining guy.
Well, no, well, you're more entertaining than
collaborative effort. What was it? Multiple. Occupancy? No, I can't remember whatever you describe me as. That's what it is. And just like that, his microphone cuts out. So, on that note, thank you very much for listening to this episode. We do these when we can. So, subscribe, and as soon as a new episode is available, you will be the first to get it. And on behalf of Chris, thank you very much. And we will see you for another episode in the near future.
This podcast is part of the After Dark Podcast Network.